Dave Barry's journey from small-town class clown to Pulitzer Prize-winning humorist reveals how embracing your natural tendencies, even the inappropriate ones, can lead to an extraordinary life. Growing up in 1950s Armonk, New York, Barry developed his comedic lens by observing the world's inherent absurdities through the influence of two remarkable parents, a Presbyterian minister father who appreciated good humor despite his serious occupation, and a mother whose dark, sharp wit would shape Barry's own comedic sensibilities. "Don't drown, kids," she'd cheerfully call as they headed to the pond, or console them with, "Oh well, someday we'll all be dead," when things went wrong. This gallows humor became the foundation for a writing style that would eventually captivate millions of readers worldwide. What makes Barry's story so compelling isn't just his success, but how he transformed an instinct for mockery into an art form that connects deeply with readers who recognize their own absurd experiences in his words. Have you ever felt like you didn't quite fit the mold society expected of you? Barry's school years illuminate the struggle many of us face between conformity and authenticity. As America panicked over Sputnik in 1957, suddenly fifth graders were expected to save the nation through mastering math and science, a perfect example of how society often misplaces responsibility. Meanwhile, Barry navigated the awkward terrain of puberty as a late bloomer with thick glasses and amateur haircuts that left him with an expanse of bare forehead that appeared to be the size of a regulation volleyball court. Rather than trying to fit in, he found his niche as the wise ass alongside his best friend Lanny, who once charged at a fencing opponent while blowing a trombone instead of using a sword. Their approach to life, taking nothing seriously and living to mock everything, eventually evolved into Barry's distinctive writing voice. His high school English teacher, Regina Adams, recognized and encouraged this talent, showing how sometimes the very qualities that make us outcasts can become our greatest strengths when properly channeled. Barry's experience reminds us that embracing our authentic selves, quirks and all, often leads to finding our true calling. Sometimes the most fulfilling careers emerge from seemingly random choices and unexpected opportunities. Barry's professional journey began with a $98 per week reporter job at a small Pennsylvania newspaper, where he covered everything from county commissioners to unusually large zucchinis. The chaotic newsroom atmosphere and unpredictability of assignments sparked something in him that bookkeeping never could. During Tropical Cyclone Agnes in 1972, after nearly getting swept away in waist-deep floodwaters with photographer Larry McDevitt, Barry realized while toasting their survival with scotch in the empty newsroom, "I love this job." While fulfilling his reporting duties, he began experimenting with humor columns, developing his signature wildly incorrect authority voice, where he'd confidently spout nonsense about topics like wilderness survival. After a career detour through the Associated Press and corporate consulting, his breakthrough came when the Miami Herald offered him complete creative freedom to write a weekly humor column about anything that amused him. What's striking about Barry's path is how he prioritized creative freedom over prestige, turning down offers for more prestigious publications to preserve his autonomy. His story challenges the conventional wisdom about career advancement, suggesting that finding work that energizes rather than depletes you matters more than climbing traditional ladders. The Miami Herald's Tropic magazine operated like a mad scientist's laboratory where talented misfits could experiment freely. Under Gene Weingarten and Tom Schroeder's leadership, the magazine embraced unconventional journalism, allowing Barry to explore eccentric topics from rollerblade Barbie experiments to flaming Pop-Tarts investigations. When Barry won a Pulitzer Prize in 1987, it validated this unorthodox approach. The front page photo captured his 7-year-old son Rob hugging him, not for the award, but for the promised Nintendo console. Rob later became a Pulitzer-winning journalist himself at the Wall Street Journal. The Tropic experience proves how finding your creative tribe, people who understand and nurture your unique perspective, can lead to both personal fulfillment and public recognition. The most meaningful success comes not from awards or recognition, but from genuine connection with your audience. Barry's readers weren't passive consumers. They became active participants in his journalistic adventures, suggesting experiments and responding passionately to his provocations. When he criticized Neil Diamond's lyrics in I Am I Said, Diamond's devoted fans unleashed a tsunami of outrage, calling Barry an idiot, jealous, and talentless. Rather than feeling remorseful, he used their rage as material for another column, recognizing that strong emotional reactions, even negative ones, indicated he'd struck a chord. Similarly, when he mocked North Dakota's attempt to rebrand itself, the state's residents responded with proud defenses, culminating in Grand Forks mayor offering to name a sewage lifting station after him, an honor Barry accepted during a frigid January visit. Perhaps his most meaningful reader impact came from his colonoscopy column, which went viral among gastroenterologists worldwide. Barry later heard from people who got colonoscopies because of his column and discovered serious issues requiring immediate treatment. Some even said it saved their lives. These experiences reveal how humor can transcend mere entertainment to create community, provoke important conversations, and occasionally even save lives. The connection between writer and reader becomes a two-way street, with each enriching the other's experience. Barry's approach to political coverage reveals the value of seeing through campaign theatrics. Covering the 1984 New Hampshire primary, he highlighted the absurdity. Exhausted candidates with fake smiles, weary staff, and grumpy reporters performing obligatory photo ops. At the 1988 Democratic Convention, Barry and two colleagues demonstrated media sensationalism by standing in the protest zone wearing cardboard boxes with eye holes. Their meaningless protest instantly drew swarms of photographers and became AP's lead convention story. Through his observations of Clinton's charm, Obama's inauguration, where he marched with the Lawn Rangers Precision Lawnmower Team, and the 2016 election, Barry shows that political humor isn't merely entertainment. It's essential for maintaining perspective in a system that takes itself too seriously. From Barry's 25 life lessons at 50, 5 endure as essential truths. Don't confuse your career with your life. A person who's nice to you but rude to the waiter isn't nice. No matter what happens, somebody will take it too seriously. Your friends love you anyway. And nobody cares if you can't dance well, just dance. His newest insight? It's gonna be okay. He's witnessed endless doomsday predictions about nuclear war, climate disasters, economic collapse, and government takeovers, yet life persists. While staying informed matters, obsessing over potential catastrophes wastes the precious days we have. Even when contemplating mortality, Barry maintains his humor, joking about his experience playing a corpse in Puccini's Johnny Shiki, declaring death loud and itchy. His approach demonstrates that finding humor in life's uncertainties isn't merely coping, it's embracing our humanity.